Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. So before we get into today's episode, just want to remind you that this is part two of the five ways to bless your children. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, pause really quick. Go back and listen to the first episode to get the first two or three points and then resume here. Thanks for tuning in today. And that leads right into the next one is attaching high value to the one being blessed. So We attach high value. We tell them this little one, let's use kids as an example. We tell them what they actually bring to the family and what they specifically mean to us. And this is important, especially when they're young. And the reason why is because they can't earn it yet. And I think that's an important thing to remember. We're telling our kids at a very young age that they are valuable and it has nothing to do with what they've done for us or what they've accomplished. We just attach high value to who they actually are. Another part of that exact space in Genesis 27, the story we're referring back to, Isaac says, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. Let the people serve you." This is a picture of a really valuable person in the Old Testament. This is not just like anybody. It's like, hey, the nations are going to bow down to you. Like he's obviously attaching a high value, thinking you, my son, are an important person and I'm attaching that to you. So other thoughts on that?
Well, I just think this is very specific. This takes really like seeing your kids and asking God for insight of like, what does this four-year-old bring to our family? If you're unsure, I think it becomes more clear as they get older, but, and specifically calling out, hey, like I'm thinking of our daughter, Scarlett, who's this, like, she's more like me than I thought she was. She's like a planner and she's, but yet she can, if the plan changes, she's the quickest one to have a positive spin on, okay, well, let's go do this. But she adds so much in just her ability to plan and keep us all on track and have a good attitude when things change. And so it's specifically saying, Scarlett, our family would not be the same without you. You bring so much to our family. And I love that you have such a good attitude when the plan changes and you'll help us form a new one really quick. We wouldn't be able to do that without you. And also, I think it's important that it's a variety of things because God's gifted us all uniquely in various ways. And not putting our kids in a box and saying, this is the one thing you add to our family. But just anytime you notice, wow, that experience would not have been the same without you. Yeah. I'm so glad you're on our family team. Mm-hmm. And we use a lot in our family when somebody in our family is struggling, we say, guys, what are we? We're a team. Mm-hmm. So when one of our teammates is struggling, we all reach down a hand and we help pull them up because we're not, we need that team member. We're not the same without that person. But I think just having a constant atmosphere in our home of seeing our kids and calling it out, and each of them specifically, because what starts to happen is then as the kids get older, they start to do it to each other.
They start to
notice, even watching the affirmation circle yesterday and watching Birdie was having a hard time with the intention being on her and she was afraid somebody was going to get loud, but watching the older kids know how to talk to her, mm-hmm. know specifically yes, like what tone of voice to use. I didn't teach them any of that. That's just what they've observed. It, yeah. And just hear their specific encouragements and things that they noticed about her. And they were all things that she adds to our family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to watch that, wow, like years of doing this because you passed it on to me. You guys gave me that language. And now they're taking it on. It's taking a whole nother life of its own. Mm-hmm. And they genuinely mean it.
Yeah.
And it's this beautiful thing that can happen. And it can start even if you haven't been blessed, even mm-hmm. if you haven't received any mm-hmm. of this. And it's going to feel extra awkward mm-hmm. and it's going to feel forced. But mm-hmm. you can change the narrative in your home
yes.
and can have this be a part of everyday conversation.
And here's what's important about attaching high value. You know, we did do the fun thing, you know, stop one of the kids, hold on just a minute. I love you. I appreciate you. I enjoy you. That's great. But attaching high value is much more specific. It's what is it about you that yeah. makes me want to be close to you and love having you a part of our family and yes. kind of essential for us to work as a team, which makes me think of the family of God is considered mm-hmm. the body of Christ.
Yep.
Two different metaphors that, you know, every part has value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fact is in our culture, in our world, inescapably, we put more value on certain people, the superstars,
mm-hmm.
and less mm-hmm. value on the custodians who, you know, or the admins who make it possible.
Yeah.
But in our families, I think we can overcome that because some of the quieter, less observable strengths need to be called out. You know, I'm going blank on trying to think of an example, but I mean,
yeah.
yes, you are attaching high value to somebody's, sometimes their determination. And so they win the race.
Yeah.
But what about that child who enters the race with no possibility of winning the race?
Yeah.
You know, you're attaching high value to what you see in that person because that person actually made the race work,
yeah.
made the race fun,
mm-hmm.
and had a lot of courage to do that. I used to collect years ago from vintage stores these things called Sunday paintings.
Hmm.
And they were people who had the courage to create a painting. And they were never going to be a Rembrandt. They were never going to sell their paintings.
Hmm.
They were just, you know, they worked hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned how to do, you know, an amateur painting. And I hung them all on the wall for my own sake to realize how much courage it took for them to do that. Whereas mm-hmm. I would prefer, I'm never going to try painting because I know I can't paint.
Yeah.
Beautiful pictures. And if I can't paint beautiful
pictures,
I'm not
even
going to
paint at all. Yeah.
But that is not a healthy thing to pass on to our children. So just yeah. letting our children say, you try really hard. And even though I see, mm-hmm. you know, in Birdie's case, mm-hmm. even though even having a birthday party is hard for her, just mm-hmm. calling out the fact that she had the courage to have one.
To try to have another birthday party.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, with Birdie, we learned a new thing, whisper singing. But then we had whisper affirmations.
Yep.
We said it all.
Yep.
I don't have much else to add except the thought came to me that each of your, all of our children are of high value because they're gifts from God.
Yeah. Yes.
Psalm 127, they were given to us as mm-hmm. gifts. So that gives a value. And then Brooke, when you were leading communion yesterday at church at Riverbend, and you quoted Ephesians 2, that
yeah.
by grace you've been saved through faith. But then you quoted verse 10, for we are his workmanship,
yeah.
created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. So I think that that's like attaching high value to every one of your kids. Like,
yes,
I can't wait to see what, you know, God's going to do for you. And we're going to talk, I think, about more about that. But I just think that we realize that these kids are gifts and they're valuable because God says they're valuable.
Yes.
And he has things prepared
for
them.
What a gift to give your kids in this time when they're searching for meaning and purpose and am I valuable and am I special? We're in a culture and time where everybody wants to be special and everybody wants to be famous.
Equally special.
Yeah, but you have to like realize how much of that comes from potentially, you know, I don't want to pick apart this and I'm not a social scientist, but how much of that comes from the lack of the blessing that comes that we need, this hole in our heart that nobody's filling or knows how to fill. One of the saddest things I see in my generation even now is the lack of ability for adults in our age and stage of life to ask questions. And I want to give you a little secret if you're listening. If you want to be a good friend or at least appear to be a good friend, just start asking questions, listen, and see how people just begin to unfold to you. And I say that not in a judgmental way, to say we have lost the art, in my opinion, at least right now, especially in different cultures, of taking interest in who people are. And I think some of the times it's because nobody ever actually attached high value to us. So we don't know how to attach high value to other people. You feel kind of worthless and you're like, I don't really care about your life. I'm just really struggling with my own life. And and we forget to ask these questions. And so I think it's just a really important thing that we can give to our kids to create security in them. But also, like, can we just start a movement of like thinking and asking people questions and say, hey, who are you? Where are you from? What's going through your life? Like, how can I pray for you? All that kind of stuff.
Okay, Diane wants to say something. I don't know if you're going to remember this, Elizabeth, as a good memory or as a terrible memory, because you were very shy and introverted. But for years, Phil was an associate pastor. And in Santa Cruz, at a church there that we were at there, every pastor had to, I think there were four pastors, and you had your main duty, and then you had several others that just... kind of got stuck with.
Yeah. Somebody had to do, right?
So we had a choice between, what did they offer you?
Yeah, well, my primary job was a worship pastor, but they said, you either also need to be the children's pastor or the senior's pastor. Well, I'm really smart because children's ministry, that's intense,
involved.
Man. It's like tons of volunteer coordination and people calling up Saturday night. I'm not going to be there tomorrow. So we had this group of seniors. This is about 20 people. There was one guy. The guys had all died. And they were all older women.
Seniors.
And so I said, I'll take the seniors. And what that meant was once a month, we would take them on an excursion out to brunch.
Or have a potluck
at the church. Or at our house. Funny. We did one at our house, I think.
We did some at our house. But we noticed that we were homeschooling our kids, so they had to come with us. And we noticed that they would not pay attention, or they were not, let's put it this way, the first couple of times they were not a great blessing to the people they were around or to us. Like, when are we going to go home? So we did a little game, and because our kids are really competitive and they liked rewards. So I said, okay, I'm going to challenge you to, I want you to, as many people as you can, but specifically it has to be one person, answer three questions. And you have to come home and report tonight at dinner. You're going to tell us the answers to these three questions. And we made up different questions, different types, like where you were born, what was life like when you were a kid my age? So, you know, like an 8-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old. And then I think they kept asking how old you are. We did let them know that generation didn't like to be asked how old they were.
Especially when they had to say 93.
Or if they had a certain memory, what was one of their first memories? Because I do remember that one, that John Mark sat next to a man this time who was, there was actually an alive man at that group. They were all really old. And he said his first memories was Pearl Harbor. He was John Mark's age at the time, and his first memory was the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he listened to it all on the radio.
What a different stage of life.
But my kids took to that like ducks to water. I mean, they would just started asking questions, and Rebecca especially learned something that she then taught the rest of our family, and that if you can ask questions long enough to get in on what makes somebody really talk, like a lot, You found their like spot, mm-hmm. and they'll carry the whole rest of the conversation. You don't hardly have to say anything anymore. in there. But really, it was really mm-hmm. insightful of a little girl recognizing that the most quiet, reserved, non-communicative person will start really talking
if you can find their thing. Yes.
Hit that key question. So that's just a tiny example. And we did it really for self-serving purposes. Yeah. We wanted our kids to be well-behaved during this.
I'm really glad you mentioned this, though, because I remember you and Elizabeth when you were on staff at a church for a while, and you were constantly, because you're so good at this, having people over, asking them all about and how long you're going to be here and what are you doing, what are your dreams, and you got tired because nobody ever asked a question about you.
It was weird. Yeah,
and it's the Jesus way to not, you know, I should need that, but yet it was hurtful. No. So I think it's showing interest in others. I mean, mm-hmm. it's show exactly what it says in Ephesians and Philippians too. Yeah. Jesus, you know, this said about Jesus, who's the perfect example again, but do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit.
Yes.
Regard one another as more important than yourselves. Don't merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others, and then have this attitude in you that was in Christ, and he's our example.
But I think and to be clear, like if you're a friend and you're listening, I genuinely do like people. Elizabeth and I genuinely do like to get to know people. So it's not like a chore, like, oh, we should ask your questions because that's going to be good for us. Mm-hmm. We really are into that, but I'm looking at our culture as a whole and going, if we don't help our children with this stuff, it will die. And it's
because
such an important part.
Because it limits relationship.
Yes.
It limits how deep a relationship can go if you're not able to ask questions and if you're not able to encourage. Like, think of all the things that we may notice about somebody, but we never say.
Yes.
What if we just started saying some of, I'm not talking about the judgmental things, but the positive things that we notice somebody do. What if we started just saying those? That. And that we can change all of culture by changing the culture in our homes and between siblings and with our kids. Like, we can change all of that. Yes, all of us can have however many kids we have sent out into the world who know how to ask good questions and who know how to encourage people because they've experienced that themselves.
And who know how to attach high value to somebody and how to express that.
Yeah. Yes. And I was just thinking with that.
Yes.
It's so different than just saying to somebody, you're amazing.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Like, that's great. And maybe maybe you need to start there because you never even, that's hard for you.
You're not used to it,
But it has to be so much more specific than that.
Which means you got to ask questions, which means you got to get to know people.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to digress too far here, but I think that's a really great point. And Elizabeth, I think you're amazing. Moving on. And I'll give you all the reasons not on this podcast currently. So the fourth thing we see when we're blessing our kids biblically is to specifically picture a special future for them. Mm-hmm. So this is like, if you're a dreamer, if you're really practical, this might be harder for you, but if you're a dreamer or kind of live in the prophetic space, this is the idea of, here's what I see you becoming. Mm-hmm. So that idea that we started with, Phil and Diane, your phrase, your children will become who you tell them you see them becoming. This is some of that. You're picturing a future. You're looking at who they are. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like a guess or like, hey, I really want you to be famous and make a lot of money so you can buy me stuff. Or this isn't like the things even that you prefer. It's you knowing your child well enough to say, here's what I see in you. A practical example is with Duke. He is always been, we named him, his name means leader. We've had a prophetic sense since he was born that God was calling him to lead. We don't know what, but like, he's got that quality in him. Like, if I say, Duke, your sisters are out of control upstairs, they're fighting, please go lead them into peace. I'll say that sometimes. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, Dad, I got it. You know, he'll go up there and sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. But like, we see that in him. Now, we don't know where all of it fleshes out, but we also see like, he's just a natural, like he's comfortable in himself. A story from yesterday that was just really funny is I was, as Phil said, I was leading communion at our church, and I had to make a quick announcement, and they were like saying, hey, could you mention youth group? And I was like, Duke, you're in the youth group. Like, you know this better than anybody. So I leaned over. I was like, do you want to just make this announcement for me? Like, I'll just call you up and you can just do it. And he's like, no, Dad, no thanks. Like, he's not a person that's like itching to be in front of people. I mean, he's a great, like, one-on-one, he's great, but he's not like, I'm going to get up, I need to be in front of you. He hates it. So he's getting all nervous. And so I was like, okay, no problem. I just figured you could probably do it if you want to. And then he stops and he leans over and he goes, actually, Dad, yeah, I think I have 3 points. I can do that. I can do that. And I was like, 3 points. And I didn't have time to ask him because I had to go on stage to lead communion. So I'm leading communion. And then the announcement comes. And then I call him up. I'm like, hey, for this announcement, I'm going to just bring Duke up because he's in youth group and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to like what this event's like every week. And so he just gets up and he's like, yeah, guys. So yeah, why don't you come out to youth group on Wednesdays? It's at 6:30. We have the three essentials. And I didn't know what he was going to say. I was like, what are the three essentials? And whatever they are, you know, if they're off, like we have some picking up to do.
I was sure candy was going to be one of
them. Yeah, I was sure of that too. And he just said, he goes, the three essentials, food, Bible, and people. And I was like, yes, that's great. Yeah. He's like, so we eat, we have a good time. Right now we're in our Alpha Youth series, diving deeper in the faith. And he's like, just leading the whole thing. I'm like, what is going on? And you guys were watching it. Like, I don't know what your perspective was, but I was sitting there going like, what is going on? And it made me so angry again that everyone in this family is naturally good at talking in public spaces. And some of us, like myself, have to work incredibly hard to just be clear in any like normal conversation, not to even mention like on stage. And he just gets up there and he's like, I got 3 quick points. Let me give you an idea. I'm like, this is so annoying. But we almost saw like his leadership's thing. And so, you know, we took that conversation like, dude, we see that you like have some real skill in this space and like have a natural gifting. Don't know what it means, but like, anyway, that's an off.
It's a great,
a great example of noticing. We've noticed these qualities in him for a long time and other ones. He has other ones that we, for a long time, I think we used to tell him like, I think you'd be a really good engineer, until he finally said, Mom, I don't want to be an engineer like that. I don't actually want to be.
His personality does not fit that of an engineer in
but
the sense.
But his mind
like,
does a little
his
bit.
His mind is very,
you know?
Yeah, that's how he's wired.
I think it's an ongoing evolving thing. We have another kid who's just extremely creative and musically gifted.
She's a maker.
Yeah, Scarlett's incredible at that.
So we're just always noticing that in her and knowing like, man, this, and not just is she good at it, she comes alive when she does it. So there's clearly something there. So we want to help her develop that and see if it's something.
But what we have to squash is the YouTube. YouTube, not her, but we, last night we were talking and laying in bed for a second. And our girls have this fun thing where they will like grab our phones and they can't open them because they're locked, because we don't leave devices open in our house. And so, but they can open the camera from the phone. So they open the camera and Birdie has like made insane amounts of funny photos. So they'll take weird pictures of their face or funny pictures. Oh, and then you'll be going through your photos later. There'll be like 15 of the weirdest faces.
She does it on my phone.
Oh yeah, it's hilarious.
And you find them and you're like, oh, Birdie's been here. And it's like the funniest collection. It's like a collection of funny faces. But we got one yesterday. She opens the phone and it's Scarlett and Birdie going, hey guys, welcome back to my channel. And we're like, oh my goodness, what is happening? And they're like going through a tutorial of the dinner that Elizabeth had made while Elizabeth and I were actually upstairs resolving an argument because it was a hard day. And we're like, hey, kids, we need to talk for a minute. And they're making a tutorial. Anyway, so we didn't improve. Like, we didn't go, hey girls,
we're not
really
encouraging
see
her becoming a YouTuber.
No, not at all. But the point being, like, it could be in all sorts of different spaces. Yeah. I know you guys did this with your kids.
Oh,
right?
Totally. I mean, what Phil really emphasized a lot was that by the high school years that we would have already identified what our kids are good at. Like, what are they individually, uniquely bent towards? Right?
Yeah, I heard a pastor say one time, he's just so great with words, very articulate. He said, children are gifts from God. And they're not just to be molded, they're to be unfolded.
Yes.
And so I think you study them. That's what you're talking about. You're studying Duke, you're studying Scarlett, you're studying Birdie. And this, in order to picture this special future, you have to know your children and study them and then speak over them when you help direct them, because hopefully you're more mature than they are and you can see them and you just have to give them some grace. Cause when they may, I think I want to do this, and you're already knowing, I don't think really you should do that.
Yeah.
But at a certain point you might say that, you know, I'm not sure that would be the best future for you, but I could really see you being successful in this direction. And I think that, you know, when we see it and we speak it over them, and sometimes you see it when they're really little, you know, like with Rebecca, we saw her, she ended up in the medical field for a while, but we saw that when she was a little kid, when Elizabeth fell and her head was bleeding and Diane was freaking out. Mm-hmm. Blood.
Call an ambulance.
And yeah. You know, you were in a stroller and the stroller had fallen over. The old strollers, it was a metal bar there. You don't see that anymore. And it caught her head.
It's unsafe.
And Rebecca's down on the floor pushing her hair aside, saying, Mom, do you have a paper towel or anything? Mom, it's not that bad. I've got it. You know, and so
basically seeing her come alive
in a medical crisis.
Yeah.
And so later on, when she wanted to become a respiratory therapist, we thought,
she ended
up in the NICU. Intensive care for babies, which a lot of people just go in there and cry their eyes out.
Yeah.
She
still has the best tension of anybody that I've ever met, of like loving motherly presence, but also like authoritative in the right amount. Because you have to have like a certain level of toughness, especially
with
the
fierceness.
It's like this level of like strength. Meekness, strength under control. It's a great thing that she totally possesses.
But
I love
you could
that
see
her.
That developing in her as a little child. Yeah. Nobody intentionally developing. It was just us being able to unfold. This is who God wired her to be. Whereas Elizabeth pretty much would hyperventilate if she had to go into a hospital. You know, just the very atmosphere and smells and closed, you know, it was not her place. So you can't just place a high value on one type of thing and the other. I also remember John Mark as a really little boy, him just loving the written word. He just, that boy just, he was super active. Some would have called him hyperactive, and I didn't like that. He had a high energy level. But you sit down on the sofa and you start reading his story and he would just calm.
Interesting.
And then later, as he would be able, the way he would be able to phrase things, his things was words and concepts behind words. And I remember him giving a devotional in seventh grade at youth group and us being astounded. There's a gift here, and other adults affirming it. For us to have ignored that would have been a great tragedy, or to have said, no, you need to be an engineer because my dad was an engineer and I valued that in my father.
Yeah.
Or you need to go on to a career where you can really build wealth.
Yeah.
And that's our value. And so just noticing what our children gravitate towards. Elizabeth in our family has often played the role of prophet. So she's the person, the wisdom, if you want wisdom, concisely said and almost bullet pointed for you with just clarity, you go to Elizabeth, and everybody in the family kind of knows that.
I go to Elizabeth.
So email Elizabeth, her email address is. I'm just kidding.
You know, if we could jump back into the Jacob and Esau story, you know, just to
say, why don't you share that thought about what happened?
Well, because every kid is longing to experience what God has for them and what was I made for, and what you know, they want to be successful in whatever it is that they're called to do. And so this envisioning of the special future, the child is longing for it. And so in the story here, Jacob, you know, out of deception, he receives this blessing. Like you said, you're going to be fruitful and cursed be those who curse you, blessed be those who bless you, nations will bow down to you. So then Esau comes in from the field. He's got the game. He prepares it and he brings it in to his father, who thought he blessed Esau, right?
Yep.
And he says, who are you? He goes, I'm Esau, your firstborn. And it says that Isaac trembled violently. Well, who was it that hunted? You know, and so he realizes what's happened and that his blessing has been stolen. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. And so here he's realizing I'm longing for this blessing and I need a blessing too. Don't you see anything in me? What's my special future? And he does. He does give him a blessing, but it's not a pretty picture. And it's interesting to me when you go on and read through in Genesis, I just looked at it because I thought,
because
we know that
this.
Later
this
on in Genesis, Jacob, who, remember, he wrestles with an angel. He has like an encounter with God and he walks with a limp for the rest of his life, but his life has changed at that point. Mm-hmm. And later on as an old man, he's giving a blessing. Mm-hmm. But I looked for where Esau gave a blessing to his kids. It's not here. his genealogy is there, the children that came and all this, but you never read in Genesis of Esau now being able to give a blessing to his kids. He never received the blessing that I think he had longed for from his father and that God would have intended
and
for him
wasn't
to have.
Able
and then
to give
sin
it.
Got in the way and he lost that blessing and the blessing he received was not the one that he would have longed for. And then we don't know if he ever did bless his kids, but there's no record of it. So, that he was then able to pass on this blessing. So we're talking about passing on a blessing to your kids so that one day they can pass on a blessing to their kids. And then, you know, grandparents are involved in passing a blessing on as well.
Yes. And in this book, The Blessing, it actually outlines that for marriage, for grandparents, for your children. So it's not just in that. So let's get to this last one. And then we want to mention quickly five things that happens when you're not blessed, right? So the last part of a blessing, a biblical blessing, is an active, genuine commitment to fulfill the blessing. Mm-hmm. That looks like us taking the responsibility to commit our lives, our time, our energy, our resources to helping them fulfill the blessing. And that is an all-in situation, right? And that's such a long game, right? But it's also something that is incredibly important. And we don't need to spend tons of time on this because I think it's pretty specific. It's you taking the time to figure out the first four to then apply this fifth one, a commitment to that kid to say, you know what, as you're developing, you know, you were sharing the story with John Mark, as you're developing your writing skill, I want to help you. Or here's the different things that I want to give you that are going to propel your future. That I know that's for us with Duke. We're trying to figure that out with Scarlett and our girls. How do we actually, you know, see what they're loving, what they're becoming, and then take time and energy and money, lots of money, it seems like, to help them fulfill.
Yeah, and college.
And college. And
education.
This is education.
Yeah.
This is you knowing your child well enough to know if they'd thrive in that environment or die in that environment, right?
And it's also, if by the time your child is a teenager, it can be a really wonderful conversational way to help them in times of trouble when they're being less than you know they could be. Mm-hmm. Reminding them, this is the special future that you see for yourself. This is where you want to go. You're interested in this. But reminding them, well, that does mean you need to get your homework done. Because as boring as math homework is, you've got just a few more years of it till you're free of it. But it's essential if you want to get to the next step with where your special future is headed.
Yep.
And I'm actively committed to doing whatever it takes to help you through that.
Yes.
So if it means tutoring, if it means us sitting down next to each other, if you need some help organizing your time, whatever it takes, I want to help you to be successful.
Yes.
The problem we have in our culture right now, I believe that lies being taught to parents of teenagers is that if you take that kind of an active commitment, you are a helicopter parent. You know, and I feel like that's making some parents back off of their kids too young and just saying, well, it's up to them. They get to decide whether they're going to succeed or fail. And I think it's just a dangerous way to view a 14-year-old or a 16-year-old.
It's passive parenting too.
And
I don't mean that rudely. I mean, it would be so much easier to do that.
Wouldn't it be
so much easier to be like, well, figure it out and I hope it goes well, but I kind of got my things and my issues and like, I hope it goes well for you. And you realize like, oh man, I know that you maybe don't regret that yet, but the end of that road is a hard one for them,
because
for you.
It's just what we know from brain science. Their brains are not matured or developed to the degree that we expect sometimes of them.
Yeah.
So basically they just need our help.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know, just practically speaking, if the idea, like if your child's really good at piano, but you don't provide a piano for them, right? Like that's one great example, or a little keyboard or something. It's just, you back it up with your life. You back it up with your commitment all in. And before we end today, I just want to talk about, you know, what happens when we are not properly blessed. So I want to talk about one negative and then one positive. Are we okay with that?
Okay.
So when you're not properly blessed or you're deprived of a blessing, some of our observations that we see not only in our lives but in scripture are a few things. One of the things that we see in ourselves and others is when you're not properly blessed, it leads to self-focus or insecurity. And I don't know about you guys, but that's real easy. The second one is anger. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of angry.
Look at Esau. Oh. He was an angry man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
For almost his whole life and mm-hmm. wasn't able to pass the blessing on because he wasn't able to see that mm-hmm. example. Thirdly, unable to celebrate others' strengths and successes. Mm-hmm. This is a hard one.
I see a lot.
Yes. Almost I feel this
competitive
in
as an adult when you're not really competing. It's like mm-hmm. you don't want to say, oh my gosh, I'm so thrilled to see that this person got that mm-hmm. reward or promotion. Or
that somebody's doing well in a certain arena. Yes. It's hard for us to come by and honestly set our own insecurity aside to go, I really see this and I'm so yeah. happy for you that this yeah. is happening.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. that's I see that for sure.
Okay, so on that one, yeah. we just had our son, youngest son Matthew's surprise 30th birthday party.
Oh, yes.
And you know, it had been a while since we'd all been together. It had been since Christmas,
yeah.
since we'd all been together. And in the meantime, Matthew had gotten a new job that is in a career that none of us can fathom because he is the only person in our family who is gifted in this area of sales. He's yeah. just, he loves
He's
sales.
Slaying it. He's doing a great job.
Love it. So we're drawing him out. And, you know, always I've said to the family, it's not boasting when it's us. We're celebrating with you because, like, you're one of us. So
yeah, tell us what
your success
well.
Makes us feel really good.
Yeah.
And so he mentioned something he had succeeded in, and everybody in the family's like, Matthew was low keying it.
Yeah.
I won this
award or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And everybody else wouldn't let him low key it. They were just so proud of him. And
yeah.
and here it is. This is not an area that any of us would succeed in, but he alone at the table. But I just loved watching my kids celebrate his successes mm-hmm. and not allow him to downplay it in this sort of, you yeah. knew he was proud of himself. He
yeah.
can't hide that smile.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that the kind of, it's not the humble Christian thing to do.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
in the family, it's not boasting. And
yeah.
I think that's the one place where we celebrate.
And you see,
I love seeing you guys celebrate each other's strengths and successes.
And I think there's something to that. Like, you know, when you create that culture, it's easy to celebrate with others. And mm-hmm. man, it helps you bless others.
Mm-hmm.
So fourthly, we see when you're not properly blessed or deprived of blessing, it's easy to become self-protective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we start protecting ourselves. We're the ones that are trying to make sure that everyone is okay or safe, or we're keeping ourselves safe.
Yeah.
And then lastly, and honestly, this is just really toxic, but it is critical of others. We become mm-hmm. incredibly critical of others mm-hmm. when we're not properly blessed or deprived. And honestly, yeah. we don't want this in ourselves. We don't want this for our kids.
Yeah.
But I want to just give everybody hope. The question that probably is looming in your mind, that I know has been looming in my mind for a lot of years, is what if I was not properly blessed?
Mm-hmm.
What if your family couldn't give that to you, didn't know to give that to you, or you came from a situation that was just so tragic and so challenging that there was no hope for something like mm-hmm. that. The coolest thing about this is that you can still be blessed. God mm-hmm. is your father mm-hmm. and he blesses us
mm-hmm.
and you can actually take this framework we're talking about yeah. and you can apply it to your marriage
mm-hmm.
and you can apply it to your friends. If you have a friend that you know has not been properly blessed, take mm-hmm. them out this week, write these five things down and go through it. Put your hand on their shoulder and just simply yeah. say, I see who you are. Make yeah. eye contact with them. Speak over them. Attach high value to who they are. Picture a special future and then commit yourself to, like, help them do that. And you can actually begin the process of blessing your spouse, your children, other people as well. And I think that's an important reminder that none of us have to go without a blessing. Phil's going to close this with something, but one last thought is, if you didn't grow up with this, there's a couple things that I've been processing through. I don't even know if I've talked with you about this, honey, but there's a practice that I've really loved, and I haven't made it official in the sense of writing everything out word for word, but it's called stop, start, and continue. And it's in your family, what do you want to stop? Like, with this generation, with our family, what are the things we want to stop? Okay, that can be pretty obvious. But then the next thing is, well, what do we want to start? What are the things we want to start in our family? Maybe it's a blessing. We want to start being a family that blesses people. I wasn't able to have that. That's okay. I can recognize and appreciate the past, but I also want to do something different in the future. And then the third one I think is really strategic and important, and that's continue, because it forces you, no matter how good or bad your situation was growing up, it actually forces you to identify some good in what happened.
Mm.
The fact that you have life or have health at all, even if it's not optimal or things could be better, it forces you to say, what are the things that I really want to continue?
Mm.
So that practice is something that's really important as you are in this process of becoming a family that wants to bless and pass on blessing. So, Phil, I know you were going to close us with just one, the passage of scripture specifically, where I think it's Jacob is blessing.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of years later after this whole story, you know, Jacob and Esau do finally reconcile.
Yeah.
You know, his anger subsides and, you know, after 20 years, there's this reunion and they reconcile. But then later on, Jacob's name is changed to Israel. Mm-hmm. And of course, he has the sons, and Joseph is one of those sons. The whole story of Joseph happens after this.
Wow.
It's one of Jacob's sons. And so now Jacob, of course, you know, he's imprisoned unjustly and led away into slavery unjustly, and then eventually rises to become, you know, prime minister of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And mm-hmm. and then the famine comes and his brothers come and don't even know who he is at first. And anyway, by this point, Joseph is grown and has his own children. So this would be Jacob's grandchildren. And he brings them to mm-hmm. his father to be blessed. And so the very end of Genesis, in the last couple of chapters, we read about this blessing. And I, in chapter 48, this is Jacob now mm-hmm. who's blessing. And it's, and so we're grandparents now. So the blessing is now going to the grandchildren. But he says here, but in chapter 49, then he blesses each of his kids. So you can see what a blessing looks like in this case. Yeah. And in chapter 49, but in chapter 48, before he gives this blessing to his children, when Joseph has come to him with Ephraim and Manasseh, he said, "May the God before whom my grandfather Abraham and my father Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this very day, the angel who has redeemed me from all harm, may he bless these boys." He's talking about his grandchildren here. "And may they preserve my name and the names of Abraham and Isaac, and may their descendants multiply greatly throughout the earth." And I love that, because we talk about raising passionate Jesus followers, is that what you're doing right now is a legacy ministry. It's not just your own kids, but your children's children. And what you're doing now is going to carry on. And here he's asking God to bless generations to come. And so I think that that's something that God wants to happen. It never happens perfectly, but his plan for the family is that this generational blessing would also flow, where we now can not just bless our four kids and the four of you who married into our family, but our grandchildren. And we do this every time we get an opportunity to. We're doing the same thing you're doing. We're looking for, what do we see in them and what can we bless them for, and speak over them words of blessing.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.